here with another episode of My OCD Life. I started rebooting this podcast, kind of getting into my story and kind of going into different topics as I go along. There's a lot of different themes that I want to hit on, and even though there's a cohesion to what I'm doing, there's also, I'm milking it, let's face it, man. Like, there's a lot of just awesome ideas and aspects of life that I find to be so full of energy. It's full of a real kind of call to explore in our own lives in ways that go beyond the generic ways that we, I think, view things. I feel like everyone's life, you have to view it and view everything through your own individuality. And if you're not really fascinated by your own individuality and your, which by default means your own individual perspective, your own individual awareness, if you're not fascinated with that, I don't think there's a proper value you're placing on your life and your individuality and your own unique consciousness. I mean, I really, in my own life, when I forsook some of my, I don't know, I would say the depths of myself, of who I knew I really was, and I thought I was pursuing what was good, I thought going after what other people wanted was, like, better than paying attention to my underlying needs and underlying emotional needs and stuff. And as men especially, we're not really conditioned in our society, or at least we haven't been for a while, to, to really know how to navigate our emotions. Don't ever really teach you that, you know? And then you grow up and things that are common sense to everybody else weren't common sense to you, or to your family, or for people that that were, you know, around you. And that's a real problem in life, man. That I think that's a very, very, if there's a very common, I guess, pet peeve that I think I see in people's lives, that they don't articulate it, but I see it, is when things are common sense to others, but not to them, and they feel shame for it. And our individuality is something where we can sufficiently navigate the world, where we find these places that aren't common sense to us. Instead of us being shamed or feeling shame or guilt for not having these areas of our life up to par, they're opportunities of us to really immerse ourselves and to focus ourselves in an exploration of ourselves and an evolution of ourselves, to where we can actually have a mastery or a degree of confidence in that area that other people don't, because it's kind of common to them. They've never had the desire to explore or maintenance that area of their life, because it seemed to kind of fall in place. Just make sure I'm talking to you. I was going to make sure, like, if I'm talking. See, if I look at my face, it looks weird. I'm not talking to you, but there I'm talking to you. And so it's always, I got to make sure that for people that are watching this on YouTube, you'll know what I'm talking about. Anyway, some things aren't common to us. And sometimes some of us are late bloomers to a lot of things. And that's okay. There's a lot of things in life you have to accept yourself in a radical way, that your life has a certain, you experience certain things in a certain way. Life unfolded. And there's all these different things that we can't possibly know about until we've lived a good bit. And we've opened our hearts and our minds up to experience things and to see things differently, and maybe be open-minded that maybe our experience has some falsehoods baked into it that we're not really, haven't been aware of. And there's a lot of maybe vampiric ideas or energies or whatever you want to call it that actually take away from who we really are. I've done a lot of studying and listening to things about emotional and, you know, I guess they call it somatic repression, and how there's actually certain things that if you repress, that becomes the baseline of your personality. So people actually judge you and say, oh, well, you're just this. And they put you into a little box. And sometimes when you want to change, the people that are the most difficult to be around are the people that have known you your whole life. Because there's like an energy, a frequency that kind of keeps you in this static sense of comfort. It doesn't allow you to really feel the poverty and the pain that you actually should experience, actually. Like, that's something that drives you to realizing, okay, I have needs that need to be met and need to be cultivated and resolved in myself. And instead of being shameful about that, I'm going to have a confidence that whenever I fail at something or whenever I feel like I'm a failure at something, it's an opportunity for me to really bring the areas that I am a success into further appreciation while valuing the opportunity that I have to become even more of a success. And not just trying to address a problem, but to being even more of a success in my identification of who I am, so that failure isn't who I am. It's something that is present, and it's merely, you know, it's almost like failure is merely the room for expansion that we've yet to expand onto. And the only way we can really appreciate our own life and appreciate what we can expand into is to acknowledge our failure. And it's honestly not even failure. It's kind of like just unfulfilled potential. And honestly, I think our response to failure, I think, almost determines our life. Because if we stumble and fall, and yet we still get up, and we still walk and learn to walk, it's not really failure. It's just being human. I mean, can you imagine like a small child, you know, stumbling and falling and everything, and, you know, cursing himself, and, you know, we'd be like, what's wrong with this kid? You know, and that's the thing, our attitude to failure, when we're small, the attitude to us failing is met with such a grace, because we know, parents know, family knows that this child is trying to learn independence, trying to walk by themselves, trying to, you know, be independent. And when it stumbles and falls, we don't make a big deal. We're like, oh yeah, he tried, you know. And yet we leave that mindset. We go into our education system that changes our psychology entirely. And I don't know if I want to mention this or not, but I saw a video recently that mentioned about how our education system, you know, wasn't always the way that it is today. And in this video, I mean, it mentioned that we incorporated a lot of aspects of education from Nazi Germany. I don't know if that's totally true. Don't call me on that. But like, it's one of those things that sort of attitude to education, that's a very extreme kind of, you know, if that, I'm definitely going to look that up more, because I don't want to totally lay a claim to our education system equates to that. But you have to see how certain toxic traits and certain negative traits and extreme traits can easily influence certain things and certain other systems in our world. And before you know it, things are an offshoot, and we don't even, you know, see the link That's how a lot of negative influence actually even happens. It's almost undetected, you know, almost unconscious a lot of times. And in the 20th century, we actually saw a lot of ideas of fascism and communism and socialism all kind of mix in with each other and kind of influence each other. So to not think that we have some influence still of those ideologies, I think is very, very naive. Collectivism, really throughout the 20th century, it really infiltrated our society in such a way that to me, both the left and the right politically, both are dominantly now mass-minded ideological parties. And, whether we like it or not, and that's why in the domain of politics is essentially like a domain of collective repression of different groups to different other groups. And the political parties are just trying to express these different agendas, whether they be good or bad, I won't say, and that's its own debate. But the fact is that even if you are right about a certain issue or topic, the way you go about it in affecting change, trying to make positive change through the means of repression and the manipulation of society, that's evil. And I feel like the 20th century really was a time where the popular notion of collective change kind of penetrated the mind. And we never fully grasp the dangers that places on individual conscience. Because you can't really expect the potency of individual conscience to be in the mass, because the mass is governed by such oversimplistic sloganeering and stuff and slogans and talking points that nuance loses itself. And a lot of the issues that we deal with today and that I feel like in my own life are really aspects that I like to get into more. And so I guess this is an episode that I feel like is really good for this, that we don't realize that we in many ways are the expression of the era that we live in and all the unconscious energies that are kind of working in our environment. And we aren't just that. There's autonomy, there is a lot of different things, but our the nature to our individuality gets really shortcut by our conformity to the conditions that we're born out of. And so, and that's just not locally, that's nationally, that's there's a lot of different things with that. Sometimes it could be a good thing. Like there's positives of certain cultures and certain aspects, but unless you're conscious of the negatives, it actually takes away from the positives. Because any culture or society or belief system that's blindly good in a few areas inevitably will be blindly bad in others, because it doesn't have a full grasp of the big picture. Because virtue is one of those strange things that unless virtue has wholeness attached to it, the very thing that's good, the very goodness that someone has can actually drive them and can overtake them into pride. And then pride blinds that person and kind of in their hubris, unless there's a certain larger scope. There isn't like a larger humility at work. And I know in my own life, when I began to experience obsessive-compulsive symptoms, I saw myself from the outside, and I judged myself, and I didn't want to admit because I was to myself what was occurring. Yeah, you know, I thought I was going insane because I wasn't really feeling what was occurring within me. I didn't feel I was capable of it, you know, and I was afraid. I was afraid of it, you know, and so. So processing our emotions and processing what is all the sophisticated things of our own life and our own time that we're being born in, those things express themselves many times in our certain neuroses, you know, and are some of our areas that we have problems in. There are some of our blind areas, and when we can identify these areas, they can be the areas that we really find great purpose in. We have something to say. We have a battle that we overcame. That really gives us something to say. When our individuality suffers evil or brokenness or pain, the first crisis that we experience in that is to devalue our individuality by shame or by guilt. And the only use of shame and guilt is to bring awareness, okay, that there is a huge problem that needs addressing. Then as you commit yourself to addressing it, the shame and guilt no longer has its role anymore. And to really have the humility to acknowledge to yourself the different aspects of your experience, it takes a long time. You have to unpack so much, and that's why the process of really becoming whole and learning wholeness and learning how to unrepress from some of the things, even if there were good things. Especially if there were good things, you know, we feel like repression often is, oftentimes it's very unconscious. It's in the name of goodness, and you know, often it's in the name of goodness, and we don't realize that our wholeness needs that further room to grow. And when we see these blind spots that were neglected or were repressed, we're seeing the unconsciousness of those that were around us that did not even have what it took to nourish us in these areas. They may have given us all they had, you know, and it's up to us to really explore our potential, to really explore our capacity for life that no one can really know but us. Because only we really feel our life. Only we can feel our potential. And so no one can really guide you into that effectively or efficiently. There's a lot of things we can learn, a lot of things that we can kind of humble ourselves. And we have a lot of overlap and we can kind of really connect on a deep level. But ultimately, you're the CEO of your life. You're the CEO of your heart. I mean, you're the ruler and the king of your own kingdom internally. And you know, a king has responsibilities. If you want a sort of royal identity expressed in your character, in your life, you have to really address how you sufficiently and powerfully wield that power and make sure things don't come in and just take it from you. If we're reactionary to people and if we don't feel like we are grounded in real truth and real awareness, then it doesn't take much for us to be reactionary and to respond and to have whatever we have inside us be taken away because we forfeit it by being a reactionary person. We don't bring to the world individual awareness, individual conscience. It's stolen from us, essentially. I mean, it's kind of like being bullied by circumstances by people. And whenever something bad happens, or whenever something happens that is in opposition to us, that's especially when we have to really dig deep in ourselves or stay in our depth, stay in the capacity for life that we nourish and we cultivate every moment of the day. You know, I was on my way home and I had this thought come to me, because this idea of the will of God in our society, or in Christian culture, I feel like it's a very, very misleading idea. Like, we tend to think about this specific thing that we're supposed to do, and we don't realize that, you know, in the scriptures it talks about, you know, that we should meditate in the word day and night. You know, we meditate in the logos. When we meditate in the word, in the very fabric, in the foundation of reality, of meaning and purpose, we meditate in that day and night. And it says that then we will have good success. Like, whatever we put our hand to, we will have good success. Like, we are transformed in who we are, so that no matter what we do, succeeds. Now, kind of taking it back to failure and stuff, is that sometimes, like, what is failure to us is not really failure in spiritual terms. It's just part of the process of us, you know, becoming the person that we're supposed to be and playing a role in the world that is getting refined. And so a lot of times, man, it's just being an imperfect person, but heading in a perfect direction. And so that's what we're striving towards. I mean, we should strive towards to every day putting touches on the symphony of the music of our lives. You know, focusing on the depth of our individual life, our individual memories, our individual joy, our individual connection to ourselves, that we automatically feel ourselves come alive to where maybe you will use different terms, maybe you will use different, I mean, you will use different, you'll have to pull from your own life. I can only speak in certain terms that I can hopefully inspire your own imagination to really take root in the feeling, you know, to really get that feeling of warmth in the understanding of your own life and experiencing the mystery of your own life.